This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Also that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I am John Batchelor. Professor H.A. Mackinder here, kind enough to remind me that I skipped the capital of Ukraine, Kyiv. Why? Because they've had a very bad week, and I wanted to rush on to Brussels, which has had a good week, about something that is not the war. About the war, the reason Kyiv has had such a bad week is, one, the very popular ex-prize fighter, mayor of Kyiv, Klitschko, has said that Zelensky has made mistakes, lots of mistakes, and that going forward now, he has to admit to those mistakes and correct them. He's overpromised in addition to making mistakes. And two, the general-in-chief of the army has said that the spring offensive failed, that there's no possibility of us breaking through the Russian defenses, and that the army is tired. Three, Washington has turned its back on Kyiv, and so much so that there was a scheduled meeting between Vladimir Zelensky on Zoom and the U.S. Senate, and he walked away from that possibility of talking to the U.S. Senate. And four, we have reason to believe that our European allies are making it very clear to Zelensky that now is the time to bargain. Your position is not going to get better for the next year. So, Professor, I come to you. Beg pardon for skipping Kyiv, but that's not a promising opening. What is its point of view?
Well, Kyiv is in a position where they are being punished now, grievously, for having believed, for want of anything else, a lot of false promises from the West and taken seriously a lot of discussion of how we would support them. And furthermore, if you'll cast our minds back, they have they believed that when Russia guaranteed their frontiers, and we did the same, and Britain did the same way back in the last century, that this meant something. And remember that in return for these guarantees, they gave up all their nuclear weapons, including tactical nuclear weapons. This is a terrible mistake. No one's ever going to give up tactical nuclear weapons again. There are some countries out there that have them and that can make them. No one's going to denuclearize again after the punishment. If Kyiv had had even 20 tactical nukes, the Russians would never have come in. So the real bad actor here is a leaderless and feckless D.C., although certainly Ukraine has made mistakes. What exactly those mistakes are, I don't know. Should they have not have resisted when the Russians invaded? Should they have demanded a more concrete series of sort of support from the West? What exactly should they have done? It turns out now that not a full 2 years into the war, it's now being declared lost. Although if you look at the map, you'll see that almost all of the territory of Ukraine is controlled by Ukraine, and there's just a small crescent in the southeast, which is controlled by the Russians. And the indications are that although Kyiv is not going to wrap the war up fast, certainly Russia is not going to either. So I would view what's going on now as being in many ways akin to the, well, how should we say it? First of all, when this invasion took place in the United States, we should have said, what are we going to do? What do we want to do? What outcome do we want? How can we make that happen? That should then have been approved by the Congress. There should have been a vote, not a vote like the Tonkin Gulf Resolution, which passes the buck back to the president, but something which binds the government to a policy, because otherwise we just are, we're hostage to the whims of political and public opinion, both of which are very, very unpredictable, and they're also very, very difficult to measure. So we now have a situation where the elite is saying that the war is somehow lost. Well, as I point out every week, in 1916, it was not clear who was going to win World War I, and to win it took tremendous greater effort. Wars are not usually won in a matter of a year or two. World War II, we had a superiority over Japan of 10 to 1 in GNP. But as the late Andrew Marshall of Net Assessment used to mutter almost silently, he was a man who never said much, very, very smart, thought a lot, which is why he was so important to us. But I remember him saying, Japan had 10% of our GNP in 1941. He said, but it took some time before we were finished with them. He understood, even then, the war had to be fought to a conclusion. Now, here's the problem. There's always talk about how there's got to be a settlement. Well, a settlement is impossible. Put it this way, a settlement in which peace is restored, a stable peace is restored to Central Europe, is impossible under present conditions unless it is imposed. And I don't think that anybody is, none of the powers are not in a position to impose it, nor do they have any agreement about what they should do. And number two, it's not clear what happens the day after this is imposed. What will Poland do? What will Turkey do? Turkey is out of the picture. There's a ridiculous article saying, is Turkey now worried that they have alienated Germany by calling out Chancellor Scholz? I think the last thing the Turks are worried about is what the Germans think about them. They know what the Germans think about them already. And they have, they spit on the Germans. That's just the way the Turks are. And they have good reason. If there were war, Turkey would beat Germany, I think. It's very, very likely. Certainly, Turkey's position, geographical and strategic position, as well as the state of her armed forces, she's more important geopolitically, and she has a more functional military than Germany does, although she doesn't have the same kind of high tech that Germany does. So I think that there's going to be no solution whether we have negotiations or not. If we have negotiations, fighting will continue one way or another. Other parties will get involved, and we'll have the kind of nightmarish idiocies that we had, that we've had in the Middle East and that we had in Vietnam. The United States, we haven't really had coherent foreign policy since Eisenhower.
Professor, do you believe Zelensky will stay or go? There's an election in 24 if he calls it.
Well, I think he should call an election.
We have a minute.
I don't think he's the key to the whole thing. But I do think that there's not enough attention is being paid to the question of the implications. What the United States says and does should matter, and it has mattered, but we are destroying our credibility, flagrantly, promiscuously destroying our credibility. But without American leadership, we don't have much. Furthermore, we're flouting international law, and we're disowning statements and commitments that we have made and signed. If you want to have an international order in which people have some idea what's going to happen or therefore able to make responsible plans, you don't do this. You have to tell people straightforward what your interests are, what you will do, what you will defend, or what you won't defend. But we haven't had any of that since a very long time ago.
Professor H.J. Mackinder, International Relations, 6 Capital, 6 Points of View. We're headed to Brussels, at the twin capital of NATO and the EU. EU emphasis when we come back. This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor.